Hello everyone, I am Jessica Saxton, the Environmental Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Mulala, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment which indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer, and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute.
Welcome, everyone. I have Caitlin Miner and Tracy Maxwell with UCAN AmeriCorps joining us today. Today we'll be discussing what everyone has been focusing on since joining UCAN AmeriCorps. So, Caitlin, would you like to introduce yourself and provide a little bit of information about yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Caitlin Miner. I am an AmeriCorps member serving through DCPSS, which is Douglas County's Partners for Student Success. And I am the BrightWorks STEAM 2 career mentor. And essentially what I do is I provide services for students as well as up to ages 16 to 24. That's primarily the students I work with. But I do resource development with them. So I meet with students to see what they need to be successful, whether that be in school or out of school. I recently moved to Douglas County, and what I've found is when Douglas County students have that support and an arm out, they really succeed in their future. And that's one of my main goals, is to help them succeed with their future.
Awesome. Thank you. That sounds like a really rewarding field you're serving in. Tracy, would you like to introduce yourself and provide a little bit of information?
Sure. Thanks, Jessica. My name's Tracy Maxwell, and I moved to Roseburg, Oregon last summer, and I ended up seeing a job for Audubon, Umpqua Valley Audubon Society, that was advertised, and I answered the ad, and it turned out to be an AmeriCorps job. So I am actually a senior citizen. But AmeriCorps was works with senior citizens, and they said yes, and Audubon said yes, and I've been working to build capacity for Umpqua Valley Audubon Society since that time, 8 months.
Wonderful. Thank you. So, Tracy, what kind of services do you provide?
That's a great question, Jessica. One of the things that I started doing right off the bat is trying to develop some curriculum for the schools. Specifically grades 3 through 5. I did develop some of that and set up some classes for that. And then also I do some tabling. We do tabling. And one of my jobs besides creating programming is also to start obtaining volunteers and doing some volunteer training. And so building capacity within the organization to do these programs when I'm gone. Some of the things we've been doing, we just did a great Earth Day event. So we put all that together and had 7 volunteers doing that. And then we are also going to be working with some of the senior citizen facilities in town, offering programming for them, as well as Sunrise Enterprises offering programming for them. And so these programs are basically developing as we go. Also, there's something called Eastwood Nature Days coming up where we'll be serving about 500 third graders. Over a 4-day period of time. And I'm developing the program for that and then also recruiting volunteers for that for now and in the future. And that's the same with something called Eastwood Camp, which is a 5th grade science camp, and another science camp for Reedsport. So developing programming and then recruiting volunteers, training volunteers, kind of getting that whole volunteer piece organized and started.
Awesome. Thank you. That sounds like some great work you've been doing.
Thank you.
Caitlin, what about you? What have you been working on since starting your service with UCAN AmeriCorps?
So through serving through UCAN AmeriCorps, some of the aspects I have been doing to provide services to students. So I essentially serve for a variety of educational environments, both for students, as I said before, and post-secondary students as well. And what I've found is there's like a variety of environments, which is very important because certain students don't learn in the typical school setting, and finding different ways to help them and prepare them. And some activities, one of the main projects I work on is a program called Live and Learn Locally. And I work on this project at the Boys and Girls Club of the Umpqua Valley here in Roseburg. And in the program, I bring industry leaders in to speak to the students about their jobs, how they got there, what they like about the job, what they don't like about the job. And what I've found is bringing these industry leaders from Roseburg, many of them are local, and have been in Roseburg their entire life. It's really showing the students that you're in the community and you can truly give back to the community. Some of the people that I have brought in to speak to the students are, I just had a librarian come in this week from the Roseburg Library, and she spoke to the students about the variety of opportunities in the library world, and also she's going to continue to come every week to give them books for the summer programming. We've had a Roseburg police officer come in a few weeks ago. The students love that. And the police officer that came in was a club member when they were a kid, as well as a staff member. And some of them remembered him from when he was younger as a staff member. So it was pretty much a full circle moment for him, as well as the students, seeing him in a different role. We've had the fire department come in. We had a funeral director from the Umpqua Valley funeral director. One of the students, they want to be a mortician when they grow up, and we couldn't really have a mortician come in. So the next best thing was a funeral director. And I was surprised at how many kids came to the presentation and really engaged. They had very nice questions to ask him. And some of the questions the student, I'm like, oh, wow, I never would have thought that. And I'm trying to think of other people that have come in, but those are the main ones that I've found the students really enjoy. And then to answer the services, so through that, I work with several different partners to bring in career-connected learning activities for that program as well. And I've found that students really enjoy that.
Wonderful. Thank you. That sounds like a lot of fun for the kids. I wish I would have had more people come in and talk to me while I was in school. So sounds like you both have been really busy during your service term. Tracy, you heard about your position and decided to reach out. Was there anything else that inspired you to serve with UCAN AmeriCorps?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't think I would have sought out the organization because I really didn't know about it before I applied for the Audubon job. But once I got involved, it's pretty exciting to feel like you're part of a larger organization that's trying to do good and do service for communities all across America. I think there's like 250,000 of us across America working in nonprofits, trying to boost capacity and such. So it feels good to be part of a bigger organization like that. And before I, when I first moved up to Oregon, I made a list of things I wanted to do. And one of them was to volunteer more and do service in my life, because that's not something I grew up with as a kid. And it's AmeriCorps has really taught me the value of that and how fun it is and how good it feels. And it's, you know, goes both ways for the community as well.
I agree. Caitlin, was there anything that inspired you to serve with UCAN AmeriCorps?
To bounce off of Tracy's response, there were several factors that contributed to myself serving through UCAN. But one of the main factors was I had an internship my last semester of college, and my supervisor and I were just talking, chit-chatting, and he mentioned to me that he thought I would do well doing service, and he introduced me to AmeriCorps and what their mission value was, and it really aligned with my own personal goals. And before then, I actually didn't know anything about AmeriCorps or any contributions to what people do. And one of my favorite things about doing service with AmeriCorps is the variety of services that we all provide for ages like 0 up to 100. So it really goes to show that you can make an impact and you can do environmental work, you can do school work, you can do nonprofit. So there's such a variety, which is one of my favorite things about serving through UCAN, and just the people. I interact with different people every day, and it really shows different perspective of how everyone lives, their lessons, their goals, their alignments through life. So that's probably one of the many reasons why I decided to serve with UCAN.
Awesome. Thank you. I can say that I ended up stumbling upon my position as well and had never heard of UCAN AmeriCorps, but since joining, I've really enjoyed it. And like Caitlin mentioned, the variety of different places you can serve and the people you see every day is, it's always changing and it's really cool.
I'd like to add something too, Jessica. I don't know if our audience is aware, but there is a, I'm not going to say it right, but I want to say a tuition stipend or so, you know, for some people that's really attractive as well. It can help with student loans. And there is a small living stipend as well. And is there anything I'm missing also? So living stipend.
There's also childcare.
Oh, yeah.
Help and assistance.
Yeah.
Yeah, child care assistance, I know is a huge one. I was actually interacting with someone. They saw like my shirt and then we got to talking. And I mentioned that I was serving through AmeriCorps and they're like, oh, one of my best friends did AmeriCorps. And one of the main enticing aspects was the child care. Very enticing benefit.
I agree. What was a favorite project or experience during your service term that you would like to share?
I'm just going to jump in because we just finished Earth Day, which was monumentally fun. And I felt like it's been my favorite project so far. And Umpqua Valley Audubon Society and Umpqua Watersheds teamed up together with the U.S. Forest Service. And we asked the farmers market if we could join them on Earth Day and have a little bit of a, some tabling going on there and some activities. And they were very generous and allowed us to come in. And it turned out to be, I think, the first nice day, good weather that we had for, I can't even tell you how long. And we, the garden was right behind us and there was music next to us. James, and I don't know his last name, was playing guitar. It was perfect. And we had set up a scavenger hunt that our volunteers from Astra, which is a Roseburg High School club, they passed out the scavenger hunt at the front end of the farmer's market. And then the families that wanted to do it participated all the way through the farmer's market. They had to find certain things. And when they got to the end, their prize was, with our other volunteers working at a table, was to create bird feeders. And it was just super fun, beautiful weather, and a perfect venue for all of us, I think, to celebrate Earth Day. So that was really been my favorite project so far, but there's a lot more coming up. We have 3 science camps and over 600 kids that we're going to be teaching in the next 3 months. So we're going to be very busy.
Yes, we are. It's going to be exciting though.
Yes, busy and exciting.
Yes.
Jessica's going to join Audubon at those science camps as well. So we're merging. We're going to be doing stations and programs together, not together, but at the same events.
That's wonderful. Yes, that you are joining to collaborate.
Yeah.
For being one of my favorite projects, just off the top of my head, that really sticks out is back in January, our whole service team, we went to Coos Bay on MLK Day, and we did a whole service project together. And we meet up probably like once every 2 months to do a team service project. We're meeting this Friday as well to do something all together. But coming together for the greater good of our area, in January, we cut berries and we just cleaned up a, I believe it was a high school, like the back area of a high school, so they could take students on walks in like any class, or if educational instructors could bring them if a student needed some time to decompress. I know for myself, just taking a 10-minute walk outside really does help me, my stress levels, especially now that it's getting so beautiful outside, so sunny, really taking in that sunshine to appreciate the area that we're in, because that's one of my favorite things about being in Oregon, is just like the simple beauty of outside. So I would probably say that's one of my favorite projects that we've worked on.
Yes, that was a really good project. Caitlin, are you going to get out and garden with all this sunny weather?
Yes, I do have a garden in the back of my house. I just built like a bed for it last weekend, so I'm very excited to get out and garden.
Nice. So moving on, thank you both for sharing. Would you like to provide some information about upcoming events, trainings, or volunteer opportunities?
Sure, I could pop in there. So we have some really fun things coming up. On Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 o'clock at the Roseburg Public Library, Steve Denny is going to discuss the preservation and restoration of the oak woodlands in Western Oregon. That's free to the public, and it's an in-person event. I think we have a few spots left for a Cooper Creek Reservoir birding trip Sunday, May 7th from 8:30 to 10:30 with Keith Pfeiffer. And there's a limit of 12 participants. So if you want to do this, you need to get in touch with Stacy Burley. And you can go to our website at umpquaaudubon.org to see how to reach Stacy to sign up for that. Also, we're going to have our annual meeting and celebration, Umpqua Valley Audubon Society annual meeting and celebration at Triple Oak Wine Vault on May 10th. Social hour starts around 4:30 and the meeting and program begins at 6. And finally, we're not going to leave this one out. We are going to try having a green heron nest survey of downtown Roseburg, Oregon. This will be a family-friendly event, and we're going to combine it with something we're calling a pub crawl. So we're going to start and end at a pub. Also, stay tuned at umpquaaudubon.org website to find out more information about that. That's on May 24th at this point, depending on the nesting, but probably May 24th from about 5 to 7. I'm also looking for volunteers, always, to help with the education programs. We're going to do, I have a fifth grade Eastwood Day on May 25th. I'm looking for a volunteer for. We're doing a science camp at Kellogg Springs, looking for a volunteer for that on June 1st. And I'm also working with Sunrise Enterprises in June, 4 different events in June. Love to have somebody along with that. And in July, we're doing, with Sunrise, we're doing some birdhouse decorating and probably making some bird feeders with them as well at a picnic that they're having. So if you're interested in volunteering with us, you can go to our website, or at the end of this, I think we'll probably be able to leave our information. Right, Jessica?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, sure. Thank you, Tracy, for sharing. That was great information.
So some upcoming events for Douglas County Partners for Student Success is happening next weekend on Saturday, May 6th at Umpqua Community College. Our big event for the year is going on next Saturday, the STEAM Extravaganza. Some activities and interactive demonstrations, including robotics, digital science. There will be a take-apart station, which I'm going later this week to pick out some tools to pick apart. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, to get a washing machine so the students will take apart those machines. And in past years, the students have really engaged and just openly played with them, which is exciting. There will be drones there. There will be a STEAM table demonstration showing the students and actually interacting, having a variety of hands-on activities, as well as mind games for all ages. There will be free food there. Everyone loves food, so come on out. And that will be at UCC, Umpqua Community College, on Saturday, May 6th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then another variety of events going on is at the Boys and Girls Club here in Roseburg. We just released our summer camp list for the upcoming summer. Some camps, including for youth entering fifth grade, just to name a few, there is a Lego week, which is called Lego Legends. We're doing it around the world in 5 days, where students will explore languages, games, foods, and traditions of other cultures. There is a Little Engineers Big Ideas Week. So that's really engaging students into the idea of engineering and all the fascinating challenges that come with it. And then just to name a few for students entering 6th through 12th grade, there is a Spice It Up Week where they'll learn fun as well as educational ideas of cooking and spices, and they'll get the hands-on experience of cooking. And then another for youth 6th through 12, there is a culinary adventure. So that's also with the aspects of cooking, but with this one, they'll really find the passions behind food and learning the culture and using locally sourced ingredients for that week, which I'm looking forward to, as well as we're having a medical detectives week, which is very interesting. I'm excited to interact with that one, where they'll learn the medical history. I believe we're having different specialties come in to speak with the students. And then just another one that I'm thinking of is a Directing Dreams camp, and the students will learn and have the opportunity to create a commercial for the Boys and Girls Club. So we're really looking forward to the creativity and the inspiration behind the students. So those are just some events going on. And if you would like to have a full description of those summer camps, you can go to the Boys and Girls Club of the Umpqua Valley website. And then going back to the STEAM extravaganza, you can find that information on the Umpqua Community College website.
Wonderful. Thank you. It sounds like you're going to have a really fun summer. And I'm excited you're offering all these camps for such a wide variety of age groups. That's going to be really great for all of them. Thank you both for sharing about your upcoming events and opportunities. So we only have a few months left in our service term, and some of us are, you know, going different paths. So Tracy, with our service term coming to an end, are you, you know, what are your intentions afterwards, and how are you feeling about that?
Well, Jessica, that's a great question, too. So I've decided to do another year with AmeriCorps. So that's something that you can also do. You can do a second year and possibly even more. I'm not sure about that. So I'm going to agree to stay 11 more months starting in August and kind of try to wrap up what I've started here and get it sort of into a remote control option. And then, so I'm not going anywhere. And it's not ending for me, so I'm not sad. I'm excited to have a little bit more time to keep working on this and getting it to a place where it can be a little more self-sufficient.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What about you, Caitlin?
It's wonderful to hear your future plans, Tracy. I know how much you love the Audubon Society, so I'm glad that you're still using those skills that you've learned in the past, what is it now, 8 months, and you'll continue to learn. But my future plans, I am not doing a second term with AmeriCorps. So I am ending my AmeriCorps service term at the end of July. But I'm really feeling thankful for everything I've learned up until now and going forward. So my future plans is, I'm originally from Massachusetts, born and raised, went to college there, grew up, and I am planning to move back to Massachusetts. I do not know the timeline of when I'm moving back, whether it be right after my service term or this fall, or I'm staying in Roseburg for a few more months after my service term. I don't know the exact answer to that, but I do know that I am planning to move back to the East Coast eventually. So that is my plan. And then I'm also planning to continue my studies. I'm looking to do my master's program in social work. And I'm really excited because in this past almost year now, which is crazy to think about, I've learned so many valuable lessons. And I think as much as I help the kids, they help me as well. Really coming into Roseburg, I didn't know what to expect. This is going to sound very bad on my part. I did research Roseburg, but I kind of just hope for the best, and it was the best. I interviewed with UCAN for my position, and I sort of just drove here 2 weeks later, and I was like, let's go, AmeriCorps. But my future plans, I'm continuing school, and I really try to instill with my students a lesson that I think back to time and time again is no matter how hard or dysfunctional your childhood was growing up, you deserve like a beautiful life, and you really do deserve the love, the peace, the joy, and consistency in your life. And you deserve to be happy. I grew up in a dysfunctional household myself, and I know how easy it is to get bogged down with thinking that it will always be like that. But what I've really been trying to engage with the students, and obviously that may have sounded like very deep, but just doing something good for yourself every day, whether that be interacting with an old friend or checking in on a close friend of yours or working out, getting that physical activity, is just do something good for yourself every day. So I digress, but those are my future plans after serving through AmeriCorps. You can.
Well, Caitlin, we are really going to miss you. Oh, my God.
I'll miss you, too. We'll all connect after mm-hmm. this call.
We forgot to tell everybody that we've become quite a little family, our AmeriCorps.
Yes.
And, you know, we've had time to really get to know each other a little bit. And that's been a real blessing of this service as well, is to know so many people from all over the country, really. And it's kind of hard to say goodbye. I know I'm going to see Jessica at Umpqua Watersheds a lot, so not too sad there. But boy, Caitlin, you're going to have to get in touch with us once in a while.
Yeah, I will.
Posted on what you're doing.
Yeah, and I am planning to visit Oregon again. Moving to Oregon, it's really just awakened my sense of awareness. And I mentioned before earlier in the call, but it's just so beautiful here. And I also mentioned that I grew up, born and raised Massachusetts, and I really think that coming to Roseburg was a risk, and it's a risk that I'm thanking myself for right now, as well as I know in the future. And something I've really learned is everyone's connected somehow, some way. Someone somewhere is like watching over you, whether that be an angel from above or just an old friend. Someone's always connected to you.
Nice. Caitlin, I hope you do get into social services, because you have a lot to offer young people in the world. They'd be great. It would be a gift to have you.
Thank you, Tracy. I really appreciate that.
I agree. Caitlin, if you don't mind me asking, what is your desired job?
No problem at all for asking. Essentially, I think at this very moment, and it may change, but my desired job would be to work with youth services to really bring those youth that are, in better words or worse words, struggling, to really help them. And I know that sounds like cliche, oh, I want to help them, but really bringing their voice to the surface, because the students that are falling under the rug are the students that really need the help, and giving them the hand to help will really make a difference. And even if I'm able to help one student and make an impact on one student a day, that's one more student that can go out, and maybe for all I know, they'll help students when they're older. So working with students that are struggling or going through those hard times, I always give them so much grace because I know they have so much on their backs. But to answer your question, really just engaging with youth services, and I do believe that every student can open new doors for themselves, and just giving them the hand to know that they can open the new doors.
That's amazing. I think you would be very good at it. So do you guys have any fun facts or information you'd like to share with the audience?
Any bird facts, Tracy?
Are you kidding? Of course. So here's just a little more background on me is that I wasn't a real quote unquote birder before I came to Audubon. And Audubon is a birding society, you guys. It is not the highway in Germany. I mean, it is, but it's not the same spelling. So we're a birding organization. And when I've been writing the curriculum, I've been able to learn about birds. And it's unbelievable what we're learning. I'm reading a book right now, listening to a book on tape called The Bird Way. And it's just fascinating because we've had some biases about how we've studied birds in the past, and it's limited us as to what we actually researched and what we found out. And we're learning things like, for instance, birds have just as many neurons in their brains as primates do. And they're just smaller, and they have these complex ways to communicate, and they actually can remember things from the past and act on them in the future. I mean, all sorts of things, of course, using tools, all sorts of stuff that we thought only humans could do in the past. And then plus, you know, things like their vision. Uh-oh, you got me started, you guys. I won't go on too long. But their vision, they see in a different spectrum than we do, ultraviolet, and the world looks different to them. And it also sounds different to them. And just fascinating to think, to learn more about the birds. But at the same time, as we're learning all that, we're also learning about plants. And the exact same thing is going on. You know, the fact that the great mother tree in the forest is actually communicating with her children and supplying resources to them and helping in times of difficulty. So it's, you know, when we learn these things, I'm hoping that as we learn them and we understand them more, people will become more careful about preserving the world as it is. It's such a difficult time, and there's so much at stake right now. And it's so important to be in every way that we can trying to tread lightly on this beautiful planet of ours. And so learning's been a huge part of my job that I've just absolutely been joyful about because it's inspiring. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Are there bird species out there yet that we haven't identified?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I do know that we're changing the names of bird species. They used to be named after the people, generally privileged white males, that found or at least quote unquote discovered them. And now we're changing a lot of the names to be more indicative of their characteristics, which is great. I think, yes, to answer your question, probably. Because the more we know, the more we know we don't know, right?
But yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it. Caitlin, do you have anything you want to share?
I don't have any fun facts to share, unfortunately. So if anyone would like to connect with me after this call, my email is dcpssamericorps@gmail.com. And I'd love to interact with anyone.
Wonderful. Thank you. Tracy, would you like to share your contact information?
Sure. I can be reached at Tracy, tracy.maxwell, M-A-X-W-E-L-L, @ucancap.org. And also I can be reached at 541-672-7065.
Awesome. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for interviewing us, Jessica. This was fun.
Yes.
Wonderful. I really enjoyed interacting with you too.
Yes. I appreciate having you both on the show and wish you luck after our service term ends and hope you enjoy the beautiful Oregon weather.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Living Downstream. And now, a special segment brought to you by Green Teacher.
In our ongoing efforts to engage with people from as many different communities as possible, We will speak to guests whose views may variously differ from or align with yours. Green Teacher is an inclusive space, and we welcome people from all backgrounds, perspectives, and faiths in a collective spirit of collaboration and exploration. This is Talking with Green Teachers, a show where environmental educators discuss recent developments, big ideas, and creative approaches to teaching green. In this episode,
this is where the role of nonprofits comes in, encouraging students to find organizations that are working in effective ways at various levels, you know, locally, regionally, nationally, globally, and recognizing that the goals of any one organization are part of a bigger picture and part of a global solidarity movement in so many different issues and topics. And that even if you can't work directly in places around the world, the way that you can change things for the better is starts in your own backyard and in your own community.
With a new semester set to begin, Sun Patton is preparing to meet her students in the course Sustainability and the Nonprofit Sector at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. As always, the course will be grounded in real-world learning, something Sun is eminently familiar with, owing to her 2 decades of on-the-ground experience, including 15 years through her consulting practice, Sun Patton & Associates. Ian met with Sun to chat about the role nonprofits play in addressing issues like climate change and what we can learn from the role NGOs have played in changing the conversation around HIV and AIDS.
So one of the courses you teach is called Sustainability and the Nonprofit Sector. And in this course, you focus on the role of nonprofit organizations in driving social, political, economic, and environmental change. So focusing specifically on environmental change and ecological sustainability, what gaps do nonprofits fill?
Well, nonprofits, you might think, you know, the first thing that might occur to you is thinking of nonprofits as serving roles such as environmental or climate change education, educating the public about some of the challenges we face environmentally and ecologically. Also, you think of nonprofits that do a lot of wildlife, habitat, or ecosystem conservation work, such as nature trusts or preserving specific species or tracts of land. It can be marine areas as well. But there's also some really valuable work that nonprofits play in trying to push some of that social change, motivating citizens as individuals, communities, and nations to actually care and act on climate change targets, for example, serving a watchdog function, holding governments and corporations accountable to the commitments and standards that they should be fulfilling or meeting. There's some exciting new work around trying to shift our economy towards renewables and energy efficiency. So it's pretty wide-ranging what nonprofits do.
Are there any opportunities that you think nonprofits have yet to fully embrace? And, you know, this could be at global, national, international levels.
Yeah, there's always more work to be done, of course. And I think sustainable commerce and economic alternatives is a field that I would like to see nonprofits play a bigger role in, giving us an alternative to our fossil fuel dependent and addicted society. Our economy is so tied up, especially in Canada, it's so tied up and intertwined with fossil fuels. And I think nonprofits can play a bigger role in providing alternatives and stimulating alternatives for our economy. I think also nonprofits could play a bigger role and are gradually working towards playing more of a legal challenge role. We have some legally binding agreements, such as the Paris Agreement on Climate Change.
Of course.
It's a legal instrument, right?
Yeah.
And we need to hold our governments to account for those commitments. And ideally, nonprofits would play a key role in kind of raising the flag to say, hey, look, citizens, our government is not meeting these agreements, and let's apply pressure and hold them to account. And generally, I think to address climate change, we're going to need major social change. I don't know what you think, Ian, about, you know, like, is that social change incremental or revolutionary? This is a debate I have with my students. Can we accomplish that through reform, or does it require a complete overhaul?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I'm reading a book right now that's addressing that very specifically about how probably an overhaul would be required. But we also know from the IPCC report from a couple of years ago that we have this approximately 10-year window to address climate change specifically to get to the Paris targets. So realistically speaking, despite our best intentions to do a systemic overhaul, particularly of the economy, can that happen within a 10-year period? I mean, you think about political terms being 4 or 5 years and just the pace of paradigm shifts in the past, you know, using history as a guide. And do we have time to create a whole different system, or do we have to work with the system that we have, but of course change many, many big things about it? Is that something you've dug into with your students?
Yeah, we talk about social movements and social change and whether they see it feasibly happening through reform or through revolution. And of course, they, being young people, they're super keen to think about a revolution. But, you know, there are, like, I come from the health sector and specifically HIV/AIDS, which we know is a super global issue and had many social justice and human rights implications, especially when it came to recognizing it and getting treatment rollout to the poorest parts of the world, especially that are hardest hit. And I think there's some examples from the HIV sector that I would love to see replicated in climate action. You know, that social change that had to happen to shift public opinion as well as create political will and get governments to actually act on something that was considered taboo, and you know, nobody wanted to talk about sex and drugs, which were driving the epidemic. Right. And it's uncomfortable for people to tackle something like HIV, and it's really uncomfortable for people to tackle climate change and think about the fundamental changes we'd have to make.
What role did nonprofits play in the shift that we've seen with HIV and AIDS?
Well, one of the organizations that I really admire and that is quite famous globally is the Treatment Action Campaign out of South Africa. Mm-hmm. It's an activist organization which was co-founded by an activist named Zaki Akhmat, who was living with HIV. And in 1998, he started this organization with direct action tactics and linking it to the anti-apartheid sentiment also that was happening in South Africa at the time. And they basically are credited, Treatment Action Campaign is credited with forcing a very reluctant government of the former South African president, Thabo Mbeki, to begin making antiretroviral drugs available to the country, to South Africans. And they essentially had to sue the government for its inaction on its own constitutional health and human rights commitments. And that's a model that I would love to see us doing. You know, we've heard of the odd attempt to launch civil suits or lawsuits against governments for their inaction on climate change targets.
Of course.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think of it in terms of a human rights abuse.
By the time students reach these scores, they are familiar with the nuts and bolts of NGOs. The next step is critically examining how they function in relation to public and private bodies.
What does that intersection between public, private, and NGOs look like on a very on-the-ground level? Because I know it, in reading through all your course outlines, real-world learning, practical application are very much front and center.
Yeah, I think what we try to do in the course Sustainability in the Nonprofit Sector is take a critical lens on the role of the nonprofit sector in our society. One of the debates we have is around the statement, a growing and active nonprofit sector is a sign of a healthy society. Mm-hmm. And at first glance, that seems like a self-evident statement. Of course, it's wonderful that we have this big nonprofit sector. But looking at it through a critical lens, you can quickly see the many ways that nonprofits fill the gaps that are left by the public and private sector. And in particular, we talk about in terms of human services and, you know, health and social services, as well as environmental protection. It's easy to see quickly the ways that nonprofits have to fill in gaps that government is not adequately fulfilling. And it can be argued that, you know, the decline of our welfare state and irresponsibility and lack of attention to environmental and human health issues means that the nonprofit sector has to grow and continuously become stronger to try to rectify those situations. So it's interesting for the students, I think, to kind of flip that and to think about from a critical side how nonprofits have to fill in the gaps.
And looking at education specifically, and particularly environmental education, because that's the meat and potatoes of what we do at Green Teacher, how does education fit into this broader web?
So nonprofits, I think, play a really important education role with the general public and contribute to public debate and advocacy around policy. They are often quite involved in researching best practices, maybe from other jurisdictions, providing economic, social, or technical analysis of different policy options, evaluating proposed policies and initiatives against benchmarks that are established, you know, in terms of environmental, economic, and social commitments and targets. That public education is really important for generating political will and pressure, which, you know, often heats up around election time, and just generally ensuring that laws and policies are implemented. Governments are infamous for making commitments that they don't fulfill.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's the unfortunate reality, and that's probably been true right from the very first government that ever existed.
Exactly.
You mentioned about research and how a lot of nonprofits engage in that, and you're involved in community-based research. You teach at two universities, Dalhousie and Halifax, and then digitally, or virtually rather, you teach at Mount Allison in Sackville, New Brunswick. Despite all of this, you don't primarily identify as an academic. Why is that?
I probably revealing a little of the stigma I feel towards.
And what is that stigma?
The traditional ivory tower of academia, the research establishment. And mostly it's almost, it comes from my experience in community-based research, where far too often academics will swoop into a community and almost as bluntly say, will you be my community for this study that's advancing my own program of research? And not always taking the time and attention to understanding what's of value and priority to the community itself. So I really see teaching and working within universities as my side gig, and it's a way for me to express and advance my influence and encourage social change. So through influencing students and trying to pass on some of my learning from working in the community, I see that as an avenue for me to do community-based work. But it's my first and foremost goals and motivations are not to advance my own program of research or my own CV.
It's time for a short break. We'll be right back.
Hey folks, it's Ian here. I just want to let you know about our two nonprofit books, Teaching Kids About Climate Change and Teaching Teens About Climate Change. Each one serves as a toolbox with ready-to-use hands-on lessons which are focused on four dimensions of climate change: global warming, climate instability, consequences of global warming, and climatic flip. If you're interested in placing an order, just visit us at greenteacher.com. We also have special rates available for bulk orders.
To ground learned concepts in reality, San has a deep well of stories and experiences to draw from, always a popular and engaging feature of her classes.
You have over 20 years of frontline on-the-ground experience in communities. Needless to say, you must have many different stories, which I know you like to bring into the class so that it's much more relatable for students. Are there any stories that are especially resonant with your students?
Yeah, I like to talk about the development of a global sentiment, a global awareness, and a global sensitivity by telling a story about a colleague of mine back in the 90s. He's passed away now, but his name is Bob Mills. This is when I still lived and worked in Alberta. And he was a former school teacher who actually lost his job because he became HIV positive and, due to discrimination, was fired from his teaching job. So he became involved in the HIV movement locally in Alberta. But he quickly developed an interest in international HIV issues as well. And he and I went together to the conference AIDS 2000 in Durban, which is always a huge international conference. It moves around the world. And the theme for 2000 was breaking the silence around treatment and care and getting recognizing the human rights of people living with HIV, particularly in resource-poor settings such as sub-Saharan Africa. We went to a massive demonstration. There must have been 10,000 people out on the streets marching in protest of the lack of access to antiretrovirals. By this time in 2000, antiretrovirals had been made available in North America and Western Europe for about 4 years already, and were credited with completely saving people's lives. They called it the Lazarus effect. Yeah, yeah, it's quite amazing. And all of these people in resource-poor countries had little to no access to these drugs in any affordable way. At that time, an annual regimen would cost about 10,000 US, and it was making the pharmaceutical companies rich, but completely out of the reach of most people who needed it. So there was a huge demonstration. There must have been 10,000 people there at least. And Bob and I got up on a concrete wall just to get a better view and to take photos and just to take in the power of that huge crowd chanting and singing and waving signs. And at that moment, he had this, you know, Sanyo digital watch that went off. Beep, 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 like that kind of sound, you know. And he looked at it, he's like, oh, I got to take my meds. It's time to take my medication. So just, you know, instinctively, he took his medication and I handed him some water that I had. And we just looked at each other. And like that, in that instant, we just realized the disparity between what we took so much for granted coming from Canada and what all these 10,000 people in front of us were desperately shouting for and fighting for. So that was a really impactful moment for me because we came back together and redoubled our efforts, not only to improve treatment access in Canada. Lots of marginalized groups still had difficulty accessing treatment, but we really shifted our focus to helping internationally as well. So that was a kind of a formative moment for me. That's just one of the stories I tell students. Yeah.
Yeah. How do students react when that comes up in class?
I think they really like the personal story of it. They can picture and imagine what it felt like. And they really like to think about the way that we as Canadians have so much privilege. I think it's impactful for them to think about the disparities across the globe and to try to place ourselves in the shoes of people who have so much less than we have here, and all the different ways that as Canadians, the way we consume and the way we spew waste into our ecosystems and the consequences it has for people clear across the globe, I think is a really important message, and not one to be overwhelming, but one to be mobilizing and create that sense of global community and solidarity.
And when students hear a story like that, what is your hope that they're going to do with it? I mean, obviously it has a big impact. It gets them thinking about it. And what's the next step from there?
I think this is where the role of nonprofits comes in, encouraging students to find organizations that are working in effective ways at various levels, you know, locally, regionally, nationally, globally, and recognizing that the goals of any one organization are part of a bigger picture and part of a global solidarity movement in so many different issues and topics. And that even if you can't work directly in places around the world, the way that you can change things for the better starts in your own backyard and in your own community. So I think that helps students feel a little less overwhelmed.
Keeping your feet on the ground also involves responding to the here and now and gleaning lessons from the challenges of the day.
Certainly right now we're seeing so many additional pressures with the COVID pandemic, and nonprofits are struggling in different ways. A lot of government resources have been diverted, understandably so, to COVID-specific projects. There's a lot of despair. A lot of people are losing hope. And you could describe what we're living through right now as the sea of uncertainty. How do we keep the momentum going for social and environmental change when most people, I think, or a great many people, are understandably focused on just getting through the day?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of messages that come out of the COVID crisis that are instructive for addressing climate change, for example. you know, public health and the idea that we are only as healthy as our community aligns together to combat something and to take concerted action. If people in our community, in our immediate neighborhood, in our immediate city don't cooperate in, you know, stemming the tide of COVID, then we all suffer. And it's really the same kind of issue with climate change impact. And I think in some ways, COVID and our response to it has given me some optimism. And I try to frame that with my students as well. One of the exam questions I had last semester in the spring in April on their final exam, they had to talk about the ways that COVID has taught us lessons about how we might react as a society and as a globe to the challenges of climate change. And the encouraging thing is that we pretty much overnight, it felt like, drastically changed our lifestyles. We drastically reoriented our lives for the greater good, to protect ourselves and to protect each other. And it's possible for us to slow down, to stop consuming as much, to stop traveling as much, to take public health and the well-being of other people into account in everything we do. I think there are some, you know, challenges in how sustainable is that over the long term? Can we keep that up? And what's the fatigue of that? But there have been some good lessons that have come out of this as well.
Yeah, I mean, the whole sentiment of think globally, act locally is directly related to COVID. We're all extremely local. We're living in much smaller spaces. We're not able to travel. We're told to stay home. You know, a lot of people are told not to leave their house, not, you know, we have these bubbles of say 10 people, depending on where you're living. So it's really doubling down on your immediate surroundings, but for the betterment of not letting this virus spread to the next town, the next province, state, country, overseas, et cetera. And you hate to think that such a terrible thing as a pandemic has shown us these lessons that we could apply to something else like climate change, but those parallels are certainly there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we need to hold on to those lessons. What I worry about is that we'll just rebound and go whole hog the other way. As soon as things open up again, people just go crazy, you know, with jet setting and purchasing. And I'm hoping that there's enough of a slowdown that it creates a psychic slowdown as well, and a bit of introspection, mm-hmm. and almost a bit of existential reexamination of what's important in life. How can we maintain happiness in a more local way without having to accumulate things and experiences that are so consuming, you know? So yeah, I'm hoping that people are taking advantage of this time to really reflect on what's important.
And undoubtedly there will be people who do that. It remains to be seen how many, what percentage of society, and we probably won't know for several years the answers, but there have certainly been many bright spots in this difficult time. Everybody's learning to live with less, whether it's individuals, nonprofits, government, private. It's certainly a case of all of us being in the same boat in a lot of ways, and hopefully these positive messages we can carry forward into the next stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today and digging into items that probably deserve a lot more than the time allotted to this podcast episode.
No problem, Ian. Thank you for having me. It was fun talking to you.
Meeting the Paris targets for greenhouse gas emissions is a daunting task, to say the least. It requires cooperation among sectors, with nonprofits filling the many gaps that can't be realistically addressed by public and private organizations. Over the next 12 weeks, Sand Patton will be dissecting these matters and guiding her students in turning ideas into concrete action. Talking with Green Teachers is co-hosted by Ian Shanahan and me, Sofia Vargas Nessi. We also voice all ads. Ian serves as the show's writer and editor. For access to all episodes, subscribe to Green Teacher and also receive our quarterly magazine, as well as exclusive access to our vast archive of webinars and magazine back issues. Thank you for joining us on this episode. We'll chat again soon.